Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Friday, March 21st. I'm Olivia Rose. A rock slide near Ketchikan yesterday morning has blocked the island's main road, leaving people who live north of the slide cut off from the city and its airport. It's not clear when the road will reopen, but city and borough officials are urging residents to make plans for an extended closure. The Alaska Department of Transportation has recently been using explosives along the hillside where the slide occurred. It was part of a hazard mitigation project to improve the stability of the slope. DOT spokesman Sam Dapsevich says it's too early to say whether the blasting caused the slide.
I do know that the construction work at that area was to mitigate the hazards that already existed. So there's been rock slides there in the past, and that's why they're working there.
City and borough officials said in a press release that they can't begin clearing the road until state landslide experts can assess the stability of the hillside. Those experts were expected to arrive around 5 p.m. last night. Dapsevich says those DOT geological engineers already began the assessment while in transit.
They just want to make sure that the risk is low of more material coming down before they start sending people in there.
Allen Marine Tours is shuttling trapped residents across the slide area with a tour boat. There are two fire stations north of the slide, and emergency services are still available on both sides. The island's only hospital is located south of the slide. Officials say they have a workaround in place to transport hospital patients across the slide zone if needed. The city and borough launched a joint emergency operations center similar to one for last August's fatal landslide in the White Cliff neighborhood. The state wrote on social media that the slide location is complex and unsafe. Once geologists approve the stability of the debris, they will look to clear a single lane for emergency vehicles. Wrangell's borough manager shut down the barge ramp last week after receiving an engineering report on its current structure, which is deteriorating. KSDK's Colette Zarnicki has this report.
A barge visits Wrangell once a week to deliver goods, including essentials like food. It docks at the 40-year-old ramp at the downtown waterfront. To make sure the ramp is structurally sound, the borough hired PND engineers to assess the barge ramp in early March. Borough manager Mason Villarma says the engineering company sent the report to the borough last week.
I went through the report with a fine-tooth comb and all you really have to do is read that conclusion paragraph that, you know, continued operation of that ramp is a risk of failure. And that's, you know, when we're looking at safety first, that's not a prudent thing to continue to operate the ramp. And we've had concerns for quite some time.
The conclusion states that current conditions of the ramp, quote, warrants concern of potential failure of the ramp. It suggests reducing the current loads and frequency of freight use. It also suggests to operate freight handling of the bowl or the forklift at an alternative location. PND engineers analyzed the barge ramp back in 2011, which allowed them to compare the structure earlier this month. At that time, they noted corrosion. And now it's extensively progressed, causing the steel elements to be in far worse condition.
All I know is that these are the circumstances we've inherited, and we need to take measures to safeguard the personnel. And you know, the most concerning out of that condition assessment is the camber of the ramp going from 3 inches of curve down to an inch minus. And if you look at it, there's a noticeable sag in the middle.
The camber is a slight curvature to add support and drainage to the structure. For now, the barge will operate and side tie at the Marine Service Center where the old mill dock is, less than a half mile away from the barge ramp. Villarma says the borough is making plans with the freight operators, Alaska Marine Lines and Samson. He says this is likely a short-term solution. He doesn't have an absolute timeline, but it could be a year to fix the barge ramp. He says this decision to decommission the barge ramp came directly from him as borough manager. He says he knows it was the right decision and should have happened a long time ago because a catastrophic failure of the ramp could have happened.
I can't say with 100% certainty that somebody's operating in a safe fashion, whether it's on city infrastructure or if it's city employees working in a certain manner. We're not willing to take that risk. And it's not even the lawsuit potential or anything like that. We just don't want to be responsible for having to call up a family and tell them that our negligence contributed to somebody either passing away or being severely injured.
Currently, future options include transitioning the barge service to the town's old mill dock at the Marine Service Center or a dock 6 miles out of town. Villarma says the current barge location doesn't seem feasible because there isn't much space if the local economy expands. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki.
People with disabilities in Alaska face many obstacles in accessing services, and they want things to improve across the system. It's why they marched to the state capitol on Wednesday with care providers and advocates. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
Access for all! Access for all! Access for all!
Outside the capitol, nearly 150 people from around the state were chanting about disability rights and demanding improved services. Many are part of the Key Coalition, a nonprofit advocacy organization in Alaska that supports people with disabilities. Key Coalition Director Michelle Giroux says they advocate for the community as a whole since anyone can develop a disability at any point in their life.
It's not just today, it's tomorrow, so let's prepare and have services and accessibility for everyone whenever the need occurs, rather than having to wait for a service.
This year's priorities include improving the state's infant learning program, which supports infants with disabilities and developmental delays. Giroux says Alaska is one of the only states in the country where the eligibility threshold for services is a 50% developmental delay.
We want to reduce that to 25% to support more children, and in the end it saves more money because if you intervene early, then those kids don't need special education.
Nikki Bass co-owns Tides, a Juneau-based agency that provides care to people with disabilities. She says the coalition is also working to improve wages for care providers.
Everyone in their lifetime is going to need caregiving at some point, and we have a whole network of strong, passionate care providers. So we're here to support them as well and ask for living wage and to continue supporting Medicaid.
Kim Chamdy, one of the rally speakers, is executive director of the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities. She says legislators want to hear from more than just service providers.
It's really the voices of people, the family members, the people who provide the services with us in partnership. We work together, we share our stories. And that's how we build the system that we need in the future.
Advocates spent the afternoon after the rally meeting with legislators and sharing their experiences. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
Alaskans 16 years and older would be able to consent to talk therapy if the state Senate passes a bill lowering the age of consent from 18. A parent or guardian would still need to consent to any medications. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Giesel, an advanced practice registered nurse, sponsored the bill. She screens Anchorage children and teens for mental health issues and says only a third of parents typically consent when their kid requests therapy.
I believe that students have a real understanding of their need for assistance, their need for counseling, their desire to talk to someone about the struggles they're having.
Typically, Giesel says major mental health challenges start around age 14. Sometimes kids turn to harmful coping strategies like using nicotine, alcohol, or drugs.
By helping them early, we can head off more advanced issues later in their teen years or even adult years.
Most states allow minors to consent to mental health care. Several allow kids to consent at age 14 and two states at age 12. Some critics of the bill worry that therapists working with younger students would encourage them to identify as transgender without parental knowledge. But peer-reviewed research shows that kids do not identify as transgender because of so-called social contagion. And experts say the United States is in the midst of a youth mental health crisis. Giesel says she sees that in her work.
Prior to COVID, I rarely had a student share significant anxiety, depression, or even suicidal ideation. During and after COVID, it has increased significantly more. And I think it's a reflection really of what's going on in our society. But I also think that parents are becoming less and less engaged with their kids.
Giesel says parents and guardians are the best people to talk to their kids about mental health struggles, and the bill is designed to include them. As written in the bill, therapists would be required to notify parents and guardians of the therapy after 5 sessions. That's unless the therapist and youth decide it's unsafe or will threaten their care. The Senate Health and Social Services Committee heard the public comment on the bill yesterday. President Donald Trump's trade war and comments about absorbing Canada into the U.S. have sparked concern in Alaska about the state's relationship with its closest neighbor. But how do Canadians feel? The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt spent the weekend at a longstanding Nordic ski race in British Columbia to find out.
It's Saturday morning and temperatures are hovering in the mid-teens. Haynes Mayor Tom Morfitt is playing O Canada on a trumpet as cars stream into a parking lot along the Klondike Highway for the Buckwheat International Ski Classic. Among them is Whitehorse resident Carmen Gustafson. She's decked out in Canadian swag and says making the trip this year felt more important than ever.
Our idea was to still come, but we thought we'd like wear some flags and be patriotic. Yeah, and just let everybody know that things aren't really okay right now.
Buckwheat is a themed cross-country ski event that's been around for decades. The skiing happens in British Columbia, and the awards ceremony and after-party are held just across the border in Skagway. But the run-up to this year's event looked a little different. President Donald Trump has called multiple times for the annexation of Canada, conducted by, quote, economic force. He's also sparked a global trade war, in part by imposing 25% tariffs on some Canadian imports. The ordeal has led some Canadians to boycott spending money in or visiting the U.S. for the time being. For months, that's been top of mind for many in Alaskan border towns, including Jamie Bricker, Skagway's tourism director.
We've received a lot of correspondence from potential Canadian visitors that have expressed their frustration with the current situation and that they may not be able to visit Skagway until this is resolved itself.
The situation has pushed some local government officials to write letters and take other steps to show support for Canadians and encourage visits to Alaska amid escalating hostility. The week before the event, race organizers said the turmoil might lead fewer Canadians to register or to attend post-race events in Skagway.
3, 2, 1!
But on race day, the parking lot is bustling. Roughly the same number of participants, around 270, registered this year as last year, and nearly 70% are Canadian. This year's theme is Creatures of the Deep, Enchantment of the Ski. So people arrive dressed as mermaids, octopus, jellyfish, and more. The real party gets going not long after the skiers take off at an aid station that sits in the middle of the course. It's about a 20-minute hike through the woods down a snow machine path. The party is in full swing. People stand around a fire, music blares, and volunteers serve burgers and beer from inside a giant snow fort carved with sea creatures. Whitehorse resident Gisley Delaplante is busy chasing his kids around the sculpture after wrapping up the race, but he stops for a minute to chat. He says Canadians are really angry with the U.S. government.
The tariffs obviously feels like a slap in the face, and then the talk about annexation and military intervention is absolutely disrespectful and not welcome.
But Delaplante adds that nobody at the race seems to be talking politics at all. He thinks that's because people are more interested in unity than antagonism and understand that federal policy has little to do with their friends in Alaska.
We love our American neighbors, and which is why this comes as such a shock and an offense.
Ed Gillis, also a Whitehorse resident, says there's a burgeoning movement in Canada to boycott the U.S., though he thinks that may pertain more to the lower 48 than Alaska. But that didn't impact his plans to attend Buckwheat this year, as he has for much of the last decade.
So we were going to miss it again this year just because everything that's going on. We were saying it's like a diplomatic mission. We're coming up to get to see our neighbors and chat and just show support for each other, I think is super important to do.
Gillis said he would go to the awards ceremony in Skagway, as he always does. That evening, the MC announced race winners and other awards, among them Best Costume. The prize is a free weekend in a cabin and a helicopter shuttle to get there. This year, it went to a Whitehorse resident who raced as a floating island of trash.
To the plastic island.
Just over the Canadian border near Skagway, I'm Avery Elfelt.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.